It is true what they say about podcasting. First, you get the money, then you get the respect, and then you get the friendship. And I'm very, very, very lucky to have spent this podcast solidifying my friendship with Psychonaut, a guy who I've spent so much time just talking an insane amount of shit with. Off air, on air, doesn't really matter. It has been so much fun. And on the other hand, I've been able to make new friends through this podcast. Like Josh, for example, a guy you might remember from the Neurotica episode. Josh is a really fun, quick-witted, proactive guy who knows a lot of useless trivia, like Psychonaut. And it is really nice to have new friends that don't just send me pictures of baked beans in inappropriate spots, like baked beans in condoms or baked beans in shoes or whatever it might be. And one of my favorite things to do ever since 2006 with Psychonaut is to just wind him up and let him talk about things that I have no idea about. Usually wrestling. Like, I don't really know much about wrestling at all. And I don't really care to know much about wrestling. I love that it exists. I love that they have an insanely dedicated fan base. And I love that Psychonaut knows so much about it. And to learn Josh is the exact same way. Oh my gosh, what better way to spend a 99th episode than to just go through WWF's Forcible Entry album, track by track, and just let him talk. It's a genius idea, I know. And so to celebrate, I have paid a Macho Man Randy Savage impersonator to do the intro. Except he never got back to me. I don't even know where he's on Fiverr. Like, if you're going to say you're doing it within 3 days, do it within 3 days or hit me up via message. But anyway, I've gone to ChatGPT and I've said, write me a podcast introduction. And then I've put that into a text-to-speech thing, an AI service with an AI bot called Clint. And I'm just going to spam a WWE soundboard underneath of it. All right, let's get into the episode. I'm here to show the world. I'm here to show the world.
Welcome to the No Holds Barred podcast, where the gang are going to dissect and deconstruct the legendary WWF wrestling album Forcible Entry. If you're a fan of new metal bands like Korn, Limp Bizkit, and Disturbed, and if you have $35,000 to spare, then this is the podcast for you. The Intimidation Overlord Psychonaut will be battling devout listener Josh in a no-holds-barred debate about the best tracks on Forcible Entry. So buckle up and get ready for a wild ride, because we're about to unleash on this iconic piece of musical history. And as they say at the start of every wrestling match, let's get ready to rumble. I mean rumble.
Great, classy, a maker of champions.
Andre, the giant.
WrestleMania.
Everyone has a place.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is electric.
You are fine.
The champ is here.
You really went all out on that one, didn't you, Riggs? Didn't bother to put the script through a spell check, though. Disturbed.
ChatGPT was really fun because I'm like, write it as a silly podcast, write it as a serious podcast intro. And then I was like, make sure you include our trademark $35,000. And it was like, done. Now I am currently in a dispute on Fiverr with the Macho Man impersonator who said I didn't give enough information. But anyway, you got to spend money to make money. We're talking wrestling. I am a surrogate for the average Joe on this episode. I don't know anything about wrestling. But you guys live and breathe it.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, live and breathe it.
You inject it into your veins daily.
I dabble with it from time to time at trendy high-class parties.
Yeah, there's still heavy regulations around it here in the States, but, you know, certain underground clubs and shady figures in dark alleyways, you can still find a way to get it.
Yeah, you know, they're trying to ban it over here. That's the thing, Josh. But you and I both know that you can't stop it. You know, it's running wild, brother. It's running wild.
It's the immovable force against the immovable object.
I don't know.
What the fuck is Forcible Entry? What is this album?
So this was another WWF compilation album, of which they did a few in the early 2000s. Most of the time, I think I mentioned this on the Neurotica episode, that they would primarily do collections of just the entrance themes that Jim Johnston produced. But then they did hip-hop one the year before that had Run DMC and Snoop Dogg and a bunch of artists like that. And then the next year, they had this one, Forcible Entry, that was, you know, as we'll come to see, a lot of alternative and new metal and, you know, heavy rock artists at the time. And it was actually the last album that WWF put out as WWF, because then they would go on to have to change their name to WWE not long after.
Yeah, they lost out to a panda on a pole match.
Yeah, Vince Russo was in charge of that one.
That's one for the smarks. That's one for the smarks.
Psychonaut, did you own this album?
No, I didn't. I owned the one beforehand, if the name escapes me now, but that was the one that Josh was talking about that had, like, I absolutely loved their remix of D-Generation X's theme. I thought it worked so well with Run DMC. But I stopped around Volume 4, because when I got to Volume 3, that's all I needed. That's all I needed. That was my era, you know? That was, like, on that CD alone, it was, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme, Thorn in My Eye, which was the theme music to Roar's War. It had one of the early versions of The Rock's theme when it was all quite funky and he was still in a group called The Nation. It had Chris Jericho's amazing theme song that just, you know, hypes me up to this day whenever I rewatch old things. So, for me, it was like, that was the zenith. That was absolutely the zenith. The only thing it was missing for me, but that would come much later, was a Rob Zombie track for Edge, because I hated Edge's first theme. His first theme was just monotonous.
Yeah, his first theme song wasn't, yeah, it was a little droney and just, you think you know me, you think you know me. And which they,
that's it.
With they, and but they brought that back for his current theme song, which is a track by Alter Bridge called Metalingus, which starts with the you think you know me and then goes into probably one of the heaviest riffs that WWE plays on a regular basis.
Was that true, though? Did you think you knew him?
You know, apparently nobody really did.
When you, like, leave a job and you have to give a farewell speech, I'm going to start mine with that. I'm like, you all think you know me so goddamn well.
That's a classic heel promo tactic. If you were a babyface and you're going to turn heel, you come out and say, I stuck up for you people. And it's because of you people that I'm doing this.
Let's flip it a minute. So, Riggs, what's your extent of your wrestling knowledge?
Undertaker is Kane's mm-hmm. brother.
Yeah, well done.
Mm-hmm. Undertaker died. Undertaker's intro was fucking sweet because the stadium would go dark and then he would just appear. And he had no pupils a lot of the time in his eyeballs. Kane was burnt or forged in the fires of hell.
No, he was burnt. You were right the first time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought I knew someone. I didn't. I was often smelling what The Rock was cooking. Cool. I think my football team here had a we've been so bad for so long, like decades. And I think we actually just stole other people's slogans because we didn't have the budget for marketing. So I think even my football team said, Carlton, can you smell what we're cooking? Yeah, I don't know much about it. I mean, we had year 10 boys in my high school who were really into it. And me being a scrawny little boy in year 7 and 8, I was always getting like some sort of wrestling hold on me. You know, they couldn't do it on against each other because I know it was too much of a fair competition. They said, let's get that sickly looking boy in the baggy ass jeans with that backwards hat and let's try and suplex him into things. So, yeah. I didn't mind it. I played the wrestling game on PlayStation 1, but that's sort of... Oh, and Mankind had a sock.
Yeah.
And much like God is also the Holy Father or whatever, and the ghost, I think he's also Cactus Jack.
Yes.
And he's also Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And, he can be.
He's also Dude Love.
Oh, my... And the one thing I always remember was in the crowd... People would just be holding up cardboard signs of Cartman, like respect my authority.
Oh,
and that would sort of be
the Attitude Era, that whole kind of 96 through to, you know, people would say that 2001, 2002 might have been the end of that era. It just depends who you're talking to. But yeah, that crossover between South Park and the WWF at the time, It was insane. I mean, to the point that wrestlers would come to the ring dressed in South Park shirts. You know, there was a tag team called the New Age Outlaws, who I remember quite fondly would come out with a Cartman t-shirts on, which then when you're a kind of a bloodthirsty teenage boy who also happens to like the kind of gross out humor that was South Park, which then blossomed into something much more beautiful. You couldn't ask for the bigger crossover. The Venn diagram on that was just on point. South Park fans, wrestling fans, all together, pop culture junkies.
And Drowning Pool fans. So let's get into the first track. This is The Game. It's Triple H's theme, and it's by Drowning Pool. I quite like that chorus.
Yeah, that's a good one. It all at the beginning of that song almost makes it kind of sound like a Disturbed song.
Except the intonation is not like this, and he's doing something else. He's not just syncopated.
Oh, we're going to get to those humana humana vocals later on. We absolutely will. But Drowning Pool actually performed this for Triple H at WrestleMania 18 in 2002. They did it in Toronto. And they'll do this from time to time, have a band come out and play the intro as the wrestler's coming down to the ring. And this theme is originally by Motorhead. And so one year, Motorhead came out and played Triple H down to the ring. So the Drowning Pool version is pretty heavy, pretty hard. I like it a lot. But part of me also kind of leans more towards the Motorhead version if given an option.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. It's not a bad cover. It's a very good cover for a special one-off because, as you said, they did play it live. They played twice at that WrestleMania because they played Tearaway, which was used as the soundtrack to basically underline the whole Triple H, Chris Jericho, Stephanie McMahon storyline. And we won't go into that. That is a huge, what we call long-term booking rigs. So, but yeah, but I like it. It was great. It was good to use on a special occasion, but my heart's still with listening to Lemmy just strain through, time to play the game. Like, it's there. That's the one. It's what you need. And it also just, it also makes you realize that, you know, people always seem to think wrestling's not that cool, but then Lemmy's cool. And if Lemmy's cool enough to do something for wrestling, then surely wrestling isn't as nerd and dweebish as people made it out to be. I mean, a lot of money's to be made in wrestling now, so there's either a hell of a lot of closeted wrestling fans out there, or a lot of people are just straight up lying.
It's like this podcast getting Josh on to try and, you know, boost our cool credentials.
Yeah, definitely. Josh is our Lemmy Kilminster.
Was Triple H the guy who would always, like, put an X over his groin and thrust at it?
Oh, you mean crotch chop? Yeah, that's the one.
Would it surprise you guys to know that I worked a job where I had a 2-year contract, and in my first 3 months, the boss brought me in and was like, hey, just want to check how you doing, you know, just a 3-month check-in. I was like, yeah, I'm going to quit. And he was like, what? And I was like, I'll see you at the year, but I'm going to quit. And he was like, all right, but you know you have to pay a fine for breaking your contract. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. And so it was really weird to have like 9 months of the job left knowing that I wasn't going to be there. Anyway, because I knew I was going to quit for so long, I started joking that I was going to, in my farewell speech, do the Triple H, crotch chop, and then just walk out backwards of the room. And it was much hyped. It was a big company of like 400 people, and I did it. As a result, I missed the show bag that they had given to everyone else who was quitting as well. So I just it was like dramatic in the moment. Everyone was like, he's going to do it. And I did it. And I walked backwards out the door doing the Triple H crotch chop. But then as soon as that door closed, I was like, oh, and I just turned around and got the subway home. So like behind the scenes was quite sad. And then everyone's like, look at this show bag we got. It's amazing. We got like Bluetooth speakers and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I'm at home, you know, and no one talks about it now, you know.
Well, you know, Riggs screwed Riggs. We've all done it, though. I got into a lot of trouble at Scouts once because we did this whole thing where, you know, you, like, troop the colour or, you know, like, do the Scouts fucking salute to the New Zealand flag. And I thought I'd be really cool and just walk up to it, pull the flag down so it's hanging, stand back for a minute, and then bust out a mean crotch chop. But I got absolutely devastated by every adult around there as well. Every damn one.
Now that you are an adult, if you saw someone do that, what would you do?
Laugh,
would you
like my tits off, man? I would be like, I'd be like, oh, break it down, da-na-na-na. And then like, get that Run DMC version on right now. Get the glow sticks out, man.
The king of rock, who? The king of rock, what?
And I'd be like, if someone turned around to me and went, oh, how dare that child do that? I went, oh, do you know what? I think you need to get ready to suck it. And then cross-shot myself. I do. Every now and again, you can talk to my wife and she'll tell you every now and again, I'll bust out a crotch chop. And she'll bust out a crotch chop to me. Like, if we have an argument and she wins, she's just like, suck it. Like, oh, man.
There's no coming back from that. It's game over.
No, there's not. But it's interesting that transcended into popular culture a lot. You know, you'd see movies where James Franco would be doing the whole crotch chop kind of thing. Or, yeah, you know, Judd Apatow movies. Like, I remember the start of Knocked Up. They were doing the actual DX crotch chop as well. So it's pretty cool how, you know, little bits of wrestling culture end up winding up in the wider popular culture.
It's almost like young males are obsessed with their groin.
Little bit, maybe. Yeah. I talked to Blink-182 about that one.
Well, Josh, you mentioned the King of Rock. What about the Kid of Rock and Kid Rock's song,
oh,
Legs?
Geez. Oh, it's even worse.
I originally had another grab, and then I kept listening to the song. I was like, there's a turntable solo? Holy shit. So I put that in. Are we meant to be impressed by turntables? Like, is it that hard? I feel like it's quite easy to do that. I reckon I could do that pretty easily. I know it's like one of those like Philistine things where it's like, oh, the good ones are great. But I feel like I could do that.
Okay. Do it.
Oh, shit. All right, next episode, final episode, I will do it. I will try and scratch legitimately.
That's alienated probably half of our audience as well, you mentioning that. Because I can't recall, Josh, you can help me out. What was Stacey Keebler's actual theme? Because all I've got in my head is ZZ Top's Legs or a really shitty WCW variant of it.
I don't really remember that she had a specific theme song. She might have come out to this a couple of times, but she always sort of ended up as a valet for somebody else, so she would kind of just come out to their theme song.
Exactly what I was going to say. Like, when she'd come out with Test, she'd come out to Test music or Scott Steiner. So, yeah, I don't even know. I know that the WWE have a real, real attraction with Kid Rock, like, ridiculously so. Like
WWE Hall of Famer Kid Rock.
Oh, God. Like, what the wrestling fans really want to see during 5 hours of wrestling. Oh, about a 15 to 20 minute Kid Rock concert, you know, just to cool everybody down. Like, no, that's how you kill an audience. That's how the WrestleMania audience. Oh, no, it was the Royal Rumble audience with Hardy. God, did you see that, Josh?
Oh, yeah.
That was abysmal.
That was rough.
That was down.
What happened?
Down, wrestling fans don't. Right. Okay. So we're going to have to contextualize this just a little bit for yourself and the listeners, Riggs. Okay. So you're what we refer to as a casual, which is you have a passing interest in wrestling and you follow maybe the bigger events.
Job.
That's it. Break it down. So you've got, and then you've got your four key events, which is Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, Survivor Series, and SummerSlam. They've always been the big four pay-per-views. And then in between, you've got kind of, they used to be referred to as In Your Houses. But, you know, they're kind of B-shows. They're not the main events. Now, the problem there, Riggs, is that Die Hard Smarks, which is basically those on the internet wrestling community that, like, I only watch things that Dave Meltzer rates 4.75 stars, you know, and anything else is shit, and the WWE is shit, and all wrestling is shit, unless it's wrestling that's been done in the Tokyo Dome. So those are the kind of fans, the ones that will shit on a product actively if they don't like it. Those are the kind of fans that permeate those big pay-per-views. So when a guy came on that they had no idea who it was, and they all they wanted to do was, like, just shut the fuck up and let's watch some wrestling, because we're about to hit a very, very hot storyline, they shat all over it. It was embarrassing. I'm sure there was some booze. It was like, it was brutal, Riggs. It was, imagine going to see a band play and they're pouring their heart out and nobody claps.
Oh, story of my life.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so just imagine what your life was like.
And then imagine trying to sell merch afterwards. Like, oh, we'll be at the merch desk. And everyone's like, fuck off. I have traveled and I have toured and, you know, not to flex too hard, but I do speak two languages. And I've never, ever seen two people such as Psychonaut and Josh just agree with each other the whole time. As, while you're talking, Josh is just like, yep, yep, yep. Do you guys feel like you're in agreement about all things wrestling?
I think that there are certain different wrestling fans. I think that, you know, I would say that I'm definitely smarky. Like, I know, by that definition, the traditional means of, I kind of know what, I follow what goes on backstage through the dirt sheets. I follow up on all the gossip and that. But I'm not going to be a dick. Like, if you like AEW, you like AEW. If you like WWE, you like WWE. You know, and then you got your casual fans like yourself, which is like, well, I don't care what company it is. If it looks cool and it's neat, I'm going to be into it. And then you've got top tier tribal, you know, you're either A or B. You can't like this, you know. Just a real shitty kind of trolly aspect of the wrestling community. So I like the fact that talking to Josh, we're at that kind of mid-level. You're a wrestling fan. I'm a wrestling fan. Wasn't that embarrassing? Yeah, but it's wrestling. What are you going to do? Rather than, wasn't that embarrassing? Oh, it was awful. And did you see the pay-per-view buy rates for that? And it's terrible, terrible. Like, wrestling's fun, you know? Don't be a miser about it. So yeah, it's cool that we're just having a chinwag about it.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. You know, And like you said, like I do pay attention to some of the stuff behind the scenes and watch, you know, stuff from Japan and some of the indies like PWG and Ring of Honor and that sort of thing. I'm not gonna, you know, if you don't know like the entire back catalog of Claudio Castagnoli's work in Ring of Honor and PWG, I'm not gonna totally discredit you. You know, if you all you like is, you know, what you see on Mondays and Fridays, then hey, cool. As long as you like wrestling and you're like, hey, that looked cool.
We're not the kind of people that's gonna go, yeah, but you realize that the Ganso bomb was a botch, it wasn't a planned spot.
Get out of here.
Get out. Who cares? Fucking hell.
Well, I actually have tickets to a wrestling match because I've got tickets to see the Smashing Pumpkins and Jane's Addiction tour Australia, and they're touring with Billy's Wrestling Company.
They're touring with the NWA. Damn.
That's pretty freaking cool.
You've got to go. You have to go and watch. Like, one of the greatest wrestlers out there at the moment, just hands down, conditioning, just his absolute technical prowess. You need to check out Tyrus, dude, the NWA World Champion. He is killer.
I'll take your word for it. Speaking of things that are killer, track number 3, Young Grow Old by Creed. I agree with that sentiment. Age doesn't make you a man. I mean, not in the eyes of the law. It very much does.
Yes.
Well, it makes you an adult. But yeah, I think Creed are onto something, and I would get that tattooed across my stomach.
I think the WWE is where is the reason why I have a little bit of sentimentality towards Creed as well. Because if you remember when we did the podcast about Creed, I don't think we were overly kind of harsh on them, much like we weren't overly harsh on Nickelback. And I think that for me stems from the WWE using one of their songs called My Sacrifice for this really epic kind of promotional video about how wonderfully emotional the storylines in the WWE are and how passionate, you know, everything is. And it was just this real kind of romanticizing of, you know, this weird, wonderful thing that I love. And the track worked for it amazingly. And ever since then, like, oh, Creed are doing a WWE song. You know, it's like what Josh was saying, you know, Alter Bridge, which is basically Creed with, I've forgotten the lead singer's name now.
Is it Miles Kennedy?
That's the one. Thank you, sir. Miles with a Y. That's what threw me off. So, but yeah, I think a lot of wrestling fans have got a bit of a soft spot for Creed. Would you agree with that, Josh? Wrestling fans of a certain age?
Yeah, definitely. And I used to think that, you know, especially like a song like this, the musically, it's a heavy tune. And even lyrically, like, you know, it's not Creed at their most preachy, so it's a little easier to, it's one of their more palatable songs, I think. But I always used to think, man, if they only had a different vocalist, they would be so much better. And lo and behold, Alter Bridge comes around and they're pretty damn good.
I really enjoy Alter Bridge, definitely.
Yeah, I definitely have a soft spot, a very, very little soft spot for Creed. Just, you can't deny some of those riffs.
Speaking of bands that I also wish had a different singer, here's Glass Shatters by Disturbed.
So, I have beef with this song. So, WrestleMania 17 is widely considered to be one of the best WrestleManias of all time. And
agreed.
It is. It,
agreed.
Top to bottom, every match is a killer. And it culminates with one of the classic rivalries of the day, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rock for the championship. And it's a great match. But Stone Cold comes out to this version of his song and not the classic Jim Johnston version. And I remember the first time I went back and watched this, I heard the David Draymond vocals come over it, and there was some cognitive dissonance or something. And I was like, this isn't right. This isn't, no, what's happening? No, I don't like this. And so it's always bugged me that it's this version of his song playing during one of the most important shows in wrestling history. And going back and re-listening to it for this, I've been trying to pinpoint why that is, because I like this era of Disturbed. Like, I put it on and it's very entertaining. And I love Stone Cold Steve Austin and I love his theme song. It's timeless. But I think I finally, yesterday when I was listening to it again, I figured out what it is. And the issue I have is because David Draymond's vocals always make me laugh. No matter what he's saying, no matter how serious he is, his voice makes me laugh without fail. Every time he does I can't help but laugh. And when Stone Cold's coming to the ring, I don't want to be laughing. I'm like, oh, shit, it's about to go down. Like, we're about to see some ass kicking, and that's not the time to be like, he's doing the I'm in a voice.
When that bald man enters that packed arena in nothing but his underwear and some boots, I want to be serious, and I want to be locked in. I don't want to be taken out by, oh, no, he's walking down the aisle, and he's wearing high-strap boots. Man, but I think that's unfair to David, because we know from research on this podcast, he takes his lyrics incredibly seriously, and he will lock himself away Bon Iver style in a cabin in the woods, get blasted out of his mind so he can tap into his, you know, deep third eye, open it up and write lyrics like smashing plates on your ass, smashing plates on your ass. So I think
true poetry.
Yeah, he's a serious artist, and I don't like the fact that people giggle and make fun of him, and he's great meme posting on Twitter. I think that's cheap shots, if you ask me.
Low hanging fruit. I think I didn't like this. How can you like mess with like Stone Cold. You either do something completely different like H Blocks did on WWE The Music Volume 3, or you just don't mess with like the classic Jim Johnson. It just, everything about that song just hypes you up. But I'd like to think, Josh, that it was some kind of Easter egg-y bad omen shit, because if I remember correctly, that was the WrestleMania in Texas where they decided, oh, you know what we're going to do in front of all of these Texas fans? Turn their hometown hero into a heel. And not even just any heel, a chicken shit, I'm going to be friends with the boss now, despite years of him being anti-authoritative, you know? So
yes,
that's why I'm blaming David Draymond for fucking up Stone Cold Steve Austin.
You know what? I'll go with that. David Draymond ruined the Stone Cold character.
Exactly. Exactly. Came in with his different idea of creative, fucked it up.
A character you cannot fuck up just because his entrance is so good, The Undertaker. And a song I think a lot of Butt Show listeners will know.
So this is the first of what I consider to be the really shite remixes on this album. So I broke the album into three different categories. There's the songs that were sort of established entrance theme songs, like the Triple H one, or we're going to hear one later for Lita that she still uses to this day.
I was going to say then, Lita as well. That is spooky.
Weird. And then there are a couple of event-specific ones, like the Creed song and one we'll hear later on. And then there are a whole bunch of these just terrible remixes that are, I'm pretty sure, just on here to get around some copyright thing, because Undertaker would just come out to the radio edit version of Roland, which is basically what this is, but it's the radio edit of Roland with motorcycle sounds. And that's it.
That makes all the difference. That's a selling point right there. Very clever, Vince. Very clever with the marketing there.
I thought about this and I was like, do the motorbike sounds add to the song? And so I thought, well, what happens if I got like the shittest song I've ever heard by a band that fucking Psychonaut likes, and I still don't get it. To the day I die, I wouldn't understand why he likes Deadzy. And if I put motorcycle noises under Deadzy, would it improve the song? I hate that song, and I actually found a new level of hatred for it watching the film clip again, and his stupid fucking face. Oh, can't handle
it. I quite liked that, but the only reason I liked that... No. The only reason I liked that is it made me think, damn, I've not played Grand Theft Auto in a while. That was a dope soundtrack on Grand Theft Auto 4. Like, wow. I know Deadzy's not part of it, but I'd always just hoon around on a motorbike, just... That's my Grand Theft Auto, just riding around on a motorbike, listening to the radio.
And my dream is to get out of the garage and drive still. I'm still stuck there trying to do a donut.
That sounded like the drag race at Gramercy Park.
I don't understand why, also, if we're going to go down this avenue about video game talk real briefly. Gran Turismo. Right, if I wanted to pass some licenses to drive and play a video game, I'd be joyriding a car outside. Don't make me do licenses to drive cars in a video game. What's the point?
I can't reverse parallel in real life. Why do I have to do it in
the
game?
It's up there with, like, you know, I've already got a copy of Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. Why would I need a remix on this album? Like, know your audience, WWE Attitude Era, please.
And if The Undertaker is from hell, or he's from... some sort of, he lives in the sky or whatever. He's Death Valley, yeah?
Technically speaking.
Why would Death Valley listen to Roland by Limp Bizkit?
I don't know. Why would Death Valley listen to Caius
That would make a little bit more sense. Like, just something with a bit of space and gravitas. Like, there's probably even better Limp Bizkit songs that they could have picked other than Roller.
Yeah, but he's on a motorbike. He's literally rolling to the ring, which I enjoyed because it meant that the ring entrances were slightly quicker than they are these days.
Yeah, I mean, he still did do a full route around the ring on the motorbike. And there were,
he wouldn't have it there any other way. That was his yard. And if he wanted to, like, you know, I still was waiting for the day he popped a wheelie. But the closest thing I got to anything as amusing as that was watching Kurt Angle come out on a moped to try and be as cool as The Undertaker. God bless Kurt Angle. He was so cool when he was just a big nerd.
God, that's the best era of Kurt Angle.
But yeah, I don't know why they put this song on it, and I agree with Josh. Like, it just seemed like, oh, we'll add some filler because maybe some people don't own one of the biggest selling nu metal albums of the time.
And when you clear those motorbike samples, you got to use them.
Oh yeah, definitely. They're as costly as Led Zeppelin samples, are they not?
Oh,
that's gonna cost us. That's gonna cost us anymore.
We not that one. Every Marvel trailer.
There's 35K right there.
The next song on the album is by Our Lady Peace for a wrestler who used to wrestle for the WWE. Great song. Good for what it was for. The wrestler in question, we're not talking about it. The song itself is good.
Good song. And that's it.
That's it.
Next track is Never Gonna Stop, the Black Cat Crossing Mix, brackets, Edge's theme by Robert Zombert.
This should have just been called the extra yeah version, because on the he just leaned in on that yeah button for the chorus,
giving James Hetfield a run for his money.
I definitely got a kick
out of
that.
Would you pay to see that on pay-per-view though, Josh? A battle of the years between Rob Zombie and James Hetfield. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. 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 And then you get Triple H involved in that as well. Whoa, baby, you got a triple threat of dream proportions. Tokyo Dome.
And then you get Macho
stars.
Man. Man come in with a flying elbow drop out of heaven. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, why didn't you just ask me or Josh to do a Macho impression and save you the money?
Didn't want to go for the cream of the crop.
Yeah, that's not
too sweet to be sour. I want the cream rises to the top. Yeah. Dig it.
Just wanted a cup of coffee in the big league.
Yeah. Just a drop in the ocean, swimming away. Macho madness. Yeah.
I'd love to hear that back, actually, because I think that's one of the best Macho impressions I've ever done.
And you've done a lot.
I have done a lot. Unnecessary, this track. I totally agree. Like, you know, it is just how can we remix this? Oh, what if we just put in an extra year? Genius, do it, you know.
First of all, promoted.
Yeah. Second of all, stock options. The original's the best. I think Edge came out to the original album version of The Sinister Urge. Yeah, The Sinister Urge was the album, wasn't it? So,
And I think this was him having this as his theme song was used as a promotional tool for Sinister Urge, because he started using it before the album came out. So they were running a lot of, like, you know, when Edge would come to the ring, it's like, and this is Never Gonna Stop from Rob Zombie's album coming out next week. So again, a lot of the synergy between nu metal and alternative bands at the time and using WWE as a promotional tool.
Yeah, which I always thought was a very clever idea. Like, you read about reports how advertisers don't want to pick up the advertising space when wrestling's on television because they deem it as low brow, but they're leaving money on the table when you look at you know, wrestling might not be in the boom period that it was in the Attitude Era and the era that we're covering, but still a lot of eyes are on the product. So hats off to the genius that went, you know what, let's get the A&R department to see if we can seed some of these songs. If not for theme songs, then at least for kind of like, you know, pay-per-view events or, you know, storyline videos, vignettes as it's called. Yeah, I just, again, much like with the Limp Bizkit track, I don't think it's necessary, especially when you had other theme songs out there. I mean, was Christian's theme song on this? With the operatic opening? No, see, that would have been a great call.
God, that's one of the best intro theme songs of all time.
Absolute and that mixed banger.
When he would come out to that just curtain of sparks behind
with
him,
with the happy, sad theatrical faces on the Titantron in the background. God, that was a good, good entrance. I highly recommend people YouTube it because he was the best at being a jerk asshole of a wrestler, Christian, and still is with AEW to this day. Who else but Christian could get away telling Luke Perry's son that his dad is dead and he's a disappointment?
He's actually so happened. Ruthless and I love it.
Creepy little bastard. I think we're in agreement that unnecessary to add this when there's other tracks that could have been picked and used instead, but you know, remixes, eh? We love them.
Rob Zombie, truly one of a kind, just like Rob Van Dam's theme by Breaking Point.
Yeah!
I saw Power Man 5000 a couple of months ago, and pretty much every song they just had the crowd chant, hey, hey, because it's all just like, you know, four to the floor, 4-4 rock. And people were still doing it, and the crowd was quite old. And I thought, we've had like 2.5 decades now of you guys just in crowds going, hey, 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 I'm over it. I don't know if you guys are over the haze, but I'm not doing it anymore.
Because you get older, that's why. It becomes more of an effort. Like standing at gigs.
Age doesn't make you a man. Not being willing to shout, hey, at a concert is a year.
I liked this song only because I liked Rob Van Dam and his whole character. Mm-hmm. So you know how with the Funeral for a Friend episode rigs that it was a, you thought I'd like it because of sentimental reasons? That's the kind of vibe I've got with this. Do I prefer his ECW theme? 100% yes. He came out to Walk by Pantera and it was dope. But of course the WWE weren't going to pay the Pantera dollar, so they went with this kind of mishmash instead, which works. Serviceable is probably a good term for it, but when you know Rob Van Dam, the character, and just how much he echoes what he is in real life, kind of like just a massive stoner that's just chill, but it'll just, you know, pick a hand. Which one are you going to get busted with because you've upset me? Hello, Taz. It's, there is a real sentimentality behind that track. So I like it. And plus, he was a draw. He was very popular. He got really good responses from the crowd. So it would be dumb for them not to include this on the album by any means.
I have a similar feeling, although every time I looked at the track listing for this, I saw a Breaking Point and I thought every single time without fail, what is Breaking Benjamin doing on this album? But likewise,
I think that when I put on a Breaking Benjamin album, what are they doing on this album?
How did this get here? The song holds a special place in my heart because Rob Van Dam was one of my favorite guys. And, you know, hearing that song is, you know, it gets that Pavlovian response of like, okay, here we go. I got the thumbs up, ready to go. Rob Van Dam.
Yep.
And I actually saw a WWF house show around this time, sort of the end of 2001, beginning of 2002. And Rob Van Dam was on that show. And when I tell you that the place blew up when One of a Kind came on, like that's a huge pop. Like he was so over at the time.
Yeah, he's one of the kind of the OG. I mean, ECW could still be considered like an independent. It was definitely, it was part of the big three, but it was certainly never going to challenge the WWE or unfortunately WCW just because of the amount of resources those companies had. So when Rob Van Dam debuted in the WWE, he was always a very popular wrestler on the independent wrestling scene and outside of the WWE. And it was always a kind of dream, like you'd want to see him join WWE, and you know, but you wouldn't want to see him leave ECW because he's just been a mainstay. So he jumped over, and it was amazing how he managed to both gather the popularity of a WWE audience but retain the popularity with quite a smarky indie audience as well. Which a lot of people would say, oh, but CM Punk paved the way for independent wrestlers to come into the WWE. But if you think, well, ECW had no money, so technically speaking, he was an independent wrestler because the checks kept bouncing. Yeah, you know, he came in. And it was so fucking cool when he'd come in, and they did not touch anything about his character. Blatantly. One of my favorite stories is that he had a tag team with Rey Mysterio, and they had a finishing move called the 420. And Vince McMahon asked, what does 420 mean, guys? And Rob just went, oh, hey, you know, it's like we've got four sets of feet and 20 toes. That's all it is, Vince. And Vince was like, oh, radio. Like, oblivious to the fact that it is an absolute cannabis reference.
They used to, in the aftermath of when Austin 316 started to become a big thing and people were coming with signs to wrestling shows, they'd come to ECW shows as well. But instead of Austin 316, they'd hold up RVD 420 signs.
Which then he adopted into the catchphrase, RVD 420 says, I just smoked your ass. Just
smoked your ass. Yeah.
Well, Josh, back to another shit remix for you.
The shittiest.
All right, now let's go on to track 10. Across the Nation, the Raw theme by the Union Underground.
What the hell was that?
I like any song that just tells you what to do. It's like, now move to the music. I've never used a cymbal choke very well. I've never really done it. I've never been in bands that required it. Josh, have you choked a cymbal before?
I've had a couple of songs that involve cymbal chokes, but I always find them to be, they can be a little tricky because, especially in a fast song, if you're not paying attention, you either end up jamming your finger into the side of the cymbal and busting your finger open that way, or you mistime the catch and your stick hit and you end up racking your thumb with the stick and busting your hand open that way. It's very violent, but effective.
Instead of busting my thumb open, I actually get a razor blade and I slip my forehead open just a little bit and then I do the cymbal choke.
Oh, you blade. Yeah. Good on you.
You're
man.
A true professional.
Good on you for blading. Did you look that up specifically for this episode, Riggs?
It was one of those, you know how like there was a few shows that were always on TV when I was growing up. Like, well, movie wise, it was always Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore. Still don't know how he knew how O'Doyle's family were going to drive off a cliff. I'll never understand that. Another one was like the Masked Magician, who was like, here's how David Copperfield made it disappear. He moved the camera angle and you're like, oh, is that it? And the other one was like, things you didn't know about wrestling. And it was always like, the referees will tell them what the next move is. Or like the referee will be like, all right, you know, in 10 seconds, do this. Or God. Something. And it was like, and they have little, and the referee will slip them blades and the floor is deliberately looser with microphones under it. So it sounds heavier.
And that is a stunt granny.
She's a stunt granny.
Yeah. The voice of Sabian from Sabrina the Teenage Witch as well.
That's right.
And the funny thing Riggs, is that they thought they were all clever, like wearing masks. And then they opened their mouths. And it was like, oh, that's Harley Race. Yeah, that's Kevin Sullivan. Cool. Well done, guys.
You can obviously tell which of the wrestlers is Christopher Daniels because his silhouette is very unmistakable. And you can put him in any mask you possibly want. Christopher Daniels is always going to be Christopher Daniels.
Absolutely. And the whole, oh, you know, this table's not gimmicked. Oh, gimmick. It's like, oh, please, just, we know this. It's like, you're treating us like idiots. Just stop.
Speaking of things that should just stop, Morgan Rose on the drums with Seven Dust, Break the Walls Down.
Stop it. No.
To be fair, he's not doing that like halftime hi-hat yelling into his gaming headset, you know, bitch, in the background. What? Get a mic stand, you psycho.
My favorite part of this song, though, is when LeJohn and Chris form a tag team in the middle of the track and have a wrestling match, apparently, with the producer. Because from what it sounded like, Jericho's got him down, and LeJohn goes up on the top rope, and he's like, hold him there, I'm coming off the top. And then as he's jumping off, he goes, Jericho!
I thought it was unnecessary, because I thought the original's still a banger.
I actually don't encourage listeners to break the walls down. Check if they're load-bearing first.
Yeah. Very important.
I know, I can't imagine how many, like, WWF wrestlers did have holes in their drywall.
Well, funnily enough, there's a Kevin Owens told a story once that he got so angry about a wrestling match. He got so angry about a wrestling bout that he picked up a Stone Cold Steve Austin mug, and he was still living at home, threw it and put a hole in the wall. And his dad just asked him, "What's going on?" And he's like, "Ah, oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin's lost." Like. Is that it? So yeah, you know, he tried to break the wall down. No one tells Kevin Owens what he can and can't do.
Well, LeJohn told him what he should do, and he listened. I'm not taking construction advice from Seven Dust.
No.
Let's move along to Turn the Tables, the Dudley Boys theme by a band I know Psychonaut has a tattoo of, Saliva. I like this because it's got a different groove. I think it's a nice palate cleanser. I don't like that they ask who's in the house, and then before I even get a chance to think about it or answer, they've told me it's the brothers that are in the house or the boys.
Oh, the boys, yeah.
Half-brothers.
Come back to that. Say, hey, who's in the house? And then have another, you know, four bars and be like, by the way, it was actually the brothers that were in the house, and then kick it in the chorus. But otherwise, do you agree? Palate cleanser?
I liked it because it was faithful to their original theme that was composed. And like you said, Riggs, I like the fact that there's a real groove to it. And when they used to come out to this, like a pyro would shoot from the roof all the way down to the stage where they were about to come out, explode, and everyone just knew, oh, yep, the Dudleys are in the house. And that song just had such a swagger that just was really perfect for that team at the time. It's great. It's one of my favorite theme songs, actually.
Yeah, this was one that that they ended up using this for a while after this album came out, and it might still even be the song that they come out to whenever they come back every so often.
Yeah, when there's that odd Royal Rumble surprise, right?
Right, exactly. Or when they had that... they had like a reunion run in 2015 or something. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the original song was good, and this is another, you know, pretty solid cover, and the first of a few entrance theme songs that Saliva would do over the years. They did the theme song for Batista. They did, I think, a song for Chris Jericho that he used maybe once or twice. And then I think they did a song for Randy Orton, like one of his first entrance themes as well. So Saliva's first dip into the WWE spectrum.
And speaking of dipping, the next track, I believe, Monster Magnet. This was back-to-back banger on this album as well, wasn't it? And I was a big Matt Hardy fan. Just play it, Riggs, because it is an absolute belter. Credit cards and memories all dumped into the sea. Well, this ain't no time for bull as I fly into the sun. Well, you can't trust anybody if you can't trust number one. Well, the man tells me my future is not so far away.
So would that intro play from the start? Like, would it all go quiet and then an acoustic guitar would come in?
No. It would just cut straight into what I would imagine is the chorus, the whole, I can slam a tornado.
I can dry up a sea.
I can absolutely get, unless your name is Bray Wyatt, you are never going to survive coming out to an acoustic guitar. Maybe if you're Elias, but just for the heeldom. No, it's crazy. Like, I didn't realize that was the start of that song. I always just assumed that it kicked off like it does, you know, in the arena with that howling, oh yeah, da-na-na, da-da-da. But now that I've heard that, it's kind of, oh, wow. They've got a tendency to, like, chop up and copy and paste bits and pieces, like with Metalingus, you know. They go kind of into the chorus, then back into the verse again, so... What? You picked the worst part of that song, oh, though, didn't you?
I went in blind, eh?
Yeah.
I just imagined they pushed play from the start of all of them. I didn't realize they were sort of being like, this is the drop. You know, those runways are long.
They are, but like the Rob Van Dam one, there's a whole intro part to that song, but they only bring it in where he goes, one of a kind, and goes into the chorus. And some of these, yeah, they're just chopped up from bits and pieces, but like the... songs on like the originals that Jim Johnston would do, like they're only one portion of a song that just kind of gets looped and looped and looped. So some of the bands got it. Like, that's one thing that I'll give Disturbed credit for, because he only wrote one verse and that's all you need.
I'm only gonna write one verse today, and you're gonna play a song walking down the road. Stand up, band at the end of it. This is all the weed I have for today.
Yeah,
stump my toe again.
But the other thing I'll say about the Matt Hardy entrance that this was part of is this was his first foray into being a singles wrestler, and he was Matt Hardy version 1.0, and he would come out, and the screen would turn into like a real player, like early streaming video kind of filter. And it would have these Matt facts on the sides, like Matt Hardy facts, like Matt Hardy only likes yellow mustard and hates Dijon. And Matt Hardy leads with his left foot and does like kick lines with his right. Just random stuff like that. And it was really funny. It was a really cool early character of his.
Definitely, I definitely agree. And what made it as much fun is just the absolute exuberance that Monster Magnet track gave you the moment that it dropped in the arena. It was just, yeah, you were in for a good time, because you never knew exactly. He's a very, very creative Matt Hardy. Definitely one of the brighter minds in the business. So. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a hand in going, I'd like that song, because he knows what he's doing. It's just a big, braggy song for a guy that is playing up the whole, you know, delusions of grandeur. And we love it. We love our wrestling like that.
Mm. Well, hopefully Raven is the same with their theme, End of Everything by Stereo Mud. Check it out.
This song bugged me so much, because
another omen, am I right?
Yeah, so Raven from early on was one of my favorite wrestlers, because he looked different. He didn't come out in like spandex and tights. He came out in like ripped jean shorts and a tied flannel and a leather jacket. He wore like Melvins and White Zombie shirts and Nevermore shirts. And
I mean, I got into Sandman purely because of the shirts that Raven mm-hmm. wore, because he'd wear Morpheus shirt. He was basically wrestling's equivalent of Eddie Vedder, you know. It was like everything about him was grunge right down. At a time where, when he first came in as the Raven character, the WWE was still doing things like, this guy is a garbage man, we're going to call him Duke the Dumpster Drose, you know, and it just added, it was one of the cool things ECW did, was it added that reality to it. So But then he joined the WWE and they just cut his fucking bollocks off. Let's call it for what it is, okay? Mm-hmm. They just neutered that guy creatively and as a gimmick. Just, so, you know,
He became the new trash man because he would come out every match. He'd come out with a shopping basket full of odds and sods. And that would be the match. Just, I got a stop sign. I got an acoustic guitar. I got a computer keyboard.
It was like the equivalent of like Frank Reynolds' character, the trash man in That Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The only difference is that Frank politicked himself to go over in that match against Rickety Cricket. So I read anyway.
That's what Dave Meltzer reported, I think.
That's
in that
definitely,
episode of the,
I don't know,
newsletter.
I think that's a little bit of SRS Fightful. You got to pay for the Patreon for that guy, so.
Oh. Yeah, it's a Fightful Select exclusive.
That's the one. it's a god-awful song for a guy that got no respect. Rodney Dangerfield and Raven.
The only thing that this song has to do with Raven is the fact that the singer screams, Raven! In the middle of the song. That's literally it.
Maybe, to be fair, Josh, I'd say the other thing about it is, much like Raven's career in the WWE, it's later on in the album, it's an afterthought.
Yep. That's very true.
Well, a band we've spoken at length about, Neurotica, with Josh's favorite, Ride of Your Life.
Let's go!
When I tell you this was such a palate cleanser, such a welcome relief, when it was like being out in a storm and then coming home, like in one of those like winter nights, it's cold, it's rainy, you've been out, maybe you had a bad day at work, you come in and your house is just perfectly warm. It's like a warm hug. It was so nice. I was so happy this was on here.
Was it a theme, or was it just like that was because it was on their label and they're like, yeah, you can have this for free?
This was the theme song to King of the Ring 2002 that Brock Lesnar won. So
spoiler alert.
It was also because this was, you know, a preview for an upcoming album that they wanted to promote, and also they were going to use it as a theme song for an event. So, but I was very happy to see that on here.
It just reminds me about the meteoric rise of Brock Lesnar at the time.
I'm confused about the next track because it's by Cypress Hill. It's Taz's theme. I know you've mentioned Taz before, and I'm keen to hear a bit of backstory and context. Just Another Victim, but is it the rock superstar chorus?
It's sort of a mashup of rock superstar and was it House of Pain? Did Just Another Victim?
Oh, Booyah Tribe did Just Another Victim, right?
Yeah,
there you go.
That's what it was.
Judgment Night soundtrack, absolutely.
But this is like the third different rejiggering of this song that Cypress Hill did, because they did Rap Superstar, and then they did Rock Superstar, and now this is Thug Superstar, or Just Another Victim.
A Holy Trinity.
But yeah, all of the superstars.
First you get the rap, then you get the rock, then you get the thug. What's the deal with Taz?
He's just a grumpy, just... Yeah, if grumpy could be a person, he's one of the grumpiest people in all of wrestling. Like, he's generally not happy about anything that's happening or anything that he's involved in, and yet he keeps being involved in it.
So he's every coworker I've ever had. Cool.
So the story goes quickly. He did a shoot interview, like a real life interview, Rob Van Dam, where he talked about how there was a bit of heat, bit of aggro backstage between him and Taz. So he went up to Taz and said, pick a hand. And Taz went, what do you mean? He went, pick a hand I'm going to punch you with. And hence why pick a hand. Hey, Taz, how you doing? Because that came from the whole, you know, and again, that goes down to Rob Van Dam, like, he's cool and laid back, but he's also not going to let you fucking walk all over him or politics, so...
So if you said that, just like Raven, was an afterthought because it's towards the end of this album. What does that mean when Mr. McMahon's theme by Dope is track 17?
This is how I imagine that this went. Vince McMahon knows that they're going to put out a compilation album. So I was looking over the track list here. Couldn't help but see, but my song isn't on here. What gives? Well, you're not really a wrestler in the... Why don't you shove it in there at the end? We don't have any... Just get somebody to do it, damn it! I want to be on the album! And so they shoved him in at 17.
Absolutely. There was a bit of belly aching involved, Josh, but at the time, Triple H got involved and went, see ya. The thing is, when you are the WWE chairman, you can do whatever you want. Yeah, there you go. True story.
It's what's best for business.
Ah, oh, God, he's saving that company at the minute. We shouldn't laugh.
He's trying his best.
Yeah, typical Vince McMahon. I gotta be a part of this too. There you go. That's it.
Can I come too?
Yeah, it's my company. Although, to be fair, Vince McMahon said that he would never expect his wrestlers to do anything he wouldn't do himself. But I didn't think that would include shitty remixes of wrestling themes. So, wow.
Quick, get me a motorbike sample.
Yeah. No chance. No, motorbikes are more of an Eric Bischoff thing.
So, yeah, that's true. That's true. Do the Sturgis remix.
And I can give you an honest answer for the next question. Why is Boy Hits Car, who are an amazingly underrated band from, you know, kind of that post-new metal world, where we go in here, Lita's theme? Because the WWE at this time did not give a shit about women's wrestling. So let's reflect on that while we listen to the greatness that is Boy Hits Car. I liked it because I like Boy Hits Car, and you know, if I can chuck out a American reference there for you, Josh, what I like is the familiarity that nearly every Boy Hits Car song sounds the same. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like Taco Bell. It's all right, but you wouldn't do it all the time.
It's the same ingredients tossed together in a different way. It all tastes more or less the same, and if that's what you're in the mood for, then it's perfect. Yeah, most of Boy Hits Car's songs, at least the ones that I've heard, you have the acoustic guitar, you have his singing parts, and then you have some screamy parts, and, you know, mix and match.
It's a formula that worked for them, but not for audio vent. Never worked for audio vent.
And this, you know, like we said earlier, Lita still comes out to the song to this very day. She made a return recently on Monday Night Raw, and, you know, you hear that acoustic guitar hits and people just come out of their seats. It's, you know, it's one of those songs that still gives you chills, and it's awesome when it happens.
Yeah, definitely. It's a hype song. It 100% is a hype song. And it just sucked because her and Trish Stratus at the time were wrestling in a period where it was kind of women's wrestling was bra and panties, you know, mud wrestling, just all the degrading like TNA shit. And at least with Lita and Trish Stratus and, you know, Molly Holly, for example, Ivory.
Oh yeah, definitely.
At least they were trying to convey that women's wrestling can be just as good as men's wrestling. So I appreciate that they could have given Lita a really generic cutesy song, but they gave her something with edge to demonstrate that she has got a bit more of an edge. She's not just a valet, she can actually wrestle. So a bit of maybe subliminal kind of booking there in our minds.
Perhaps. And I would agree with you too. When she started going out on her own, I kind of assumed that she would have some, like, you know, something a little more generic, and when she came out to that, it's like, okay, they're actually going to try something with her. This is cool because, you know, it's at least somewhat empowering before she gets in the ring and has Jerry Lawler just screaming, puppies, for the entire match.
Yeah. They saved the best till last, though, because I think it's unanimous that this version of a WWE theme is pretty beloved, even though the guy behind the character is, pardon my language, a massive piece of shit these days. So,
well, that's polite.
Oh, is he? This song fucking rules, though. This is really good. Slow Chemical by Finger 11. If that song isn't on Ez from Space Goat's workout playlist, it will be after this episode, I promise you. And I didn't even put in that iconic guitar at the start.
That riff guitar is... it's iconic. But this song, coming after the Rob Van Dam song, reminds me of a phenomenon that WWE will do when they take two solo wrestlers and pair them up in a tag team. What they'll sometimes do is they'll mash up their theme songs, and most of the time it doesn't work. And this time was no different, because it would be Kane's theme song with the... And then they'd take the One of a Kind from Rob Van Dam's thing and just kind of shoehorn it in there. So it's this very evil sounding menacing song with One of a Kind. One of a Kind.
It really took me out of the moment of like wanting to just, you know, like I'm just here to watch like a guy that was hideously burned and now he's unmasked and the burns were actually, you know, in his head. He wasn't actually scarred. He was just told that he was scarred. It's really taken me out of the moment having that. Like,
Rob Zombie in the background. Yeah,
you know what? You might as well have. They were throwing everything else in the kitchen sink in there, throwing a couple of yas, throwing a motorcycle sound, like just a total sound collage. But Kane getting unmasked is actually one of the moments that took me out of wrestling for a while.
Yeah,
for the same reason. He unmasked. It was very dramatic, and I remember at first seeing that the hair came off with the mask and thinking, well, that's not his real hair. And then he turns around and all of these supposed scars and burns that he's been tortured with his life is just some grease paint. And that was a kayfabe killer that I couldn't come back from.
I think at that stage in wrestling world, my brain hadn't fully developed into the beautiful hyper genius I am now. And I would have believed the press release. I'm like, this guy lives in hell. He was forged by fire. Like, I wouldn't have known all the theatrics behind it, you know? Somewhere deep in my mind, I'm still quite scared of Kane. Like, that he could appear in the mirror one day.
Oh, don't be. One of my favorite things to see now on social media is whenever Glenn Jacobs, because he's like a libertarian governor of...
He's the mayor of Knox County in Tennessee.
That's
which is where Knoxville is.
So,
Johnny.
So
yep.
Kane would go on his Twitter account and like just write some absolute Jamie Kennedy red pill kind of shit at times, you know. And my favorite response is there's a wrestler for AEW called Hangman Adam Page who had a great kind of storyline where he was just this, they called him like the anxious millennium cowboy just because he had confidence issues, but every time Kane would tweet something stupid, the immediate response that Hangman Adam Page would do is to tweet a comment underneath linking to a video, which is the 10 most brutal headshots Kane has ever taken in the WWE.
Yeah, that tells you all you need to know right there.
It's a beautiful little sass. It's like, mwah, chef's kiss, like, not exactly burying him, but just doing it just enough to go, hey, just a reminder.
take this with an artery clogging pinch of salt.
That brings us to the end of this classic album. I feel enlightened. I'm much more informed now. But it brings us to the start of the game. And I realize I'm not the one to create a wrestling game because I know sweet fuck all. But your iconic Kahoot creator, Mastodon00, has created a Kahoot for you guys. So if you could pull out your phone and go to kahoot.it and enter this pin. Here we go. Mastodon00's wrestling quiz. Brought to you by Pepsi. Gentlemen, how did Buff Bagwell get into wrestling? Did he go through WCW Power Plant? Was he the valet for Leilani Kai and Judy Martin? He met Sting while working out in the gym, or he met Jim Crockett at the mall? Do you know who Buff Bagwell is?
Yeah.
He's buff, he's the stuff, and the girls just can't get enough.
You both got it right. Yeah! That is incredible. Okay, cool. I don't know how you know these things. What did Ric Flair want his wrestling name to be? Slick Rick McQuick, Ric Flair, Rambling Ricky Rhodes, or Rick Adonis? Someone went with Rambling Ricky Rhodes. And someone went with Rick Adonis. The answer was Rambling Ricky Rhodes.
No!
There's a recent Ric Flair documentary that I just watched where one of his early influences was Dusty Rhodes. And so when he was first breaking in, he wanted to be another Rhodes. So he wanted to be Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes. And whoever was training, I forget who it was like, what's your name? Like, Richard Flair? That kind of sounds like Flair. Be Ric Flair. And that was it.
I'm going to file this podcast under educational. Next. The next one is, who is the original assassin's Jody Hamilton's son? Is it Nick Patrick, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Barry Dorsaw, or Buddy Rock?
Oh my God. This right. is.
Oh crap.
Fuck, I'd rather you hum wrestling themes than me and guess that, to be honest with you, Riggs. Wow.
I'm taking a random stab at this one.
Yeah, I'm going for a random stab as well.
The answer was Nick Patrick.
Oh, okay. Shit.
Crooked referee Josh. Nick Patrick. I wouldn't have guessed that in a million years. That was a total shot in the dark.
But you did guess it. You literally got it right. You can come back from this, Psychonaut. Who was not a son of Bob Armstrong? Road Doug Jesse James? Arachnid? Oh, you both got it. It was Billy Gunn.
Yeah.
Road Doug Jesse James is one of the funniest. One of my mates at university asked me if Doug the Spirit Level McBain was still wrestling, and I went, I think you'll find it's Jim the Anvil Neidhart, dude.
Idiot.
Come on.
I love it. Doug the Spirit Level McBain. It's brilliant.
Who made their wrestling debut as Texas Red? Oh, Dan Spivey, mate. Sid Vicious, JBL,
You've
or
got
Mark
this one,
Calloway?
Josh. Yeah, absolutely. The Last Ride is a fantastic documentary the WWE produced. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of those backstage vignettes where they're like just him and Paul Bearer shooting the shit. Like, that's so cool to see.
It's so crazy that, you know, The Undertaker's voice was usually, you know, like, you will rest in peace. And then you hear him, like, his normal voice, it's really high-pitched, like, and I was like, god damn, so I just got on the phone, like, holy shit.
He kind of sounds like Hank Hill.
He does. And I caught Paul Bearer whacking off in my tool shit.
I burned down the funeral parlor, I tell you what.
But he burned it down with pure propane, because my name's Hank Hill. And I sell propane accessories.
Next question. Who was Demolition Axe's original partner? Oh, Moondog Rex, Barry Dorsal, Brian Adams, or
God
Don Morocco? Oh, it's Moondog Rex.
Oh, okay. I guess Barry Dorsal. He's also spelled Barry Dorsal now 3 different times.
Moondog Rex was originally, but then when Vince did his whole Black Friday buying up all the territories, I think Moondog, they just thought, nah, we're going to party with this guy called Barry Darsaw, and he's going to be smashing Axe, and we got the fantastic 80s wrestling team Demolition, who are not a knockoff of the Road Warriors. Mm-hmm. That's harsh on them.
Don't even think that. Next one. We're going to do 10 questions. Who originally made Ric Flair's robes? Was it Linda Blood, Ricky Steamboat's wife? The fuck? Olivia Walker's wrestling two wife? Second wife, I guess. Elvis's seamstress? Or Christine Race Harley's racer's wife? What the fuck?
Does this make sense to you? Did you find this or not?
Yeah, I found it from Mastodon 00.
This person needs a copy editor badly.
Who originally made Ric Flair's robes? You've got four, three.
I'm guessing it.
Oh, you both got it wrong.
It was me, Austin. Yeah. It was me all along.
Sorry, yeah. You both got it wrong. It was Olivia Walker wrestling second wife. You both said Linda Blood, Ricky's Steamboat's wife.
We did. It just, they got a bit of a history together, haven't they? Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair, so.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. But yeah, apparently Mr. Wrestling 2's wife.
Who did Jim Crockett buy the Saturday night TV spot on WTBS from? Vern Gagne, Vince McMahon, Ted Turner, or Fritz von Erich? I'm going to say Ted Turner, by the way. Am I right?
The name is Vern Gagne.
My bad.
He's a Minnesota guy. But this is actually going to be an interesting story because the answer is he bought the rights from Vince McMahon because there was something called, I think it was Black Saturday, right? When he took over Black Saturday,
that's right.
And so part of that, he bought a block of television in the South where they had been running NWA, Jim Crockett, Mid-South Wrestling. And so when people who were fans of that tuned in to see what they're used to, they saw WWF and the stuff that they, none of these wrestlers they ever knew, none of these guys that they, like, none of it made sense. And so they, nobody tuned in. And so Vince McMahon thought, well, this is a dead time slot. So he sold it to Jim Crockett for pennies. And that's how they built the WCW brand and ended up going to war with McMahon.
Josh is taking the lead. He's 4,337 versus Stone Cold Psychonaut, 2,811. Two more. Who was Sting's original tag partner? Was it Eddie Gilbert, Rick Steiner, Jim Hellwig, or Lex Luger? Jim Hellwig, you've both got it right.
Yeah! I think this podcast, if I'm right, Josh, is Jim Hellwig approved.
There's Jim Hellwig, the ultimate warrior and all the ultimate maniacs. Put the fuel in the rocket ship.
It's so scary how he died. It was almost like he knew he was going to die the day after WrestleMania. It was insane. He came out, gave this whole heartfelt promo, kind of like putting it all behind me. And then the next day, the ultimate warrior is dead. He still did some things that were pretty shitty, though.
Yeah, the A&E biography of the Ultimate Warrior that put out a couple of years ago is really good, but they go into some of that less than favorable stuff that he did. He had some rather questionable views, and he was very vocal about them. So glad he was able to sort of make amends at the end of his life. But yeah, he is an interesting fella.
Last question, Psychonaut. I think this is time-based. So my advice to you, I don't want to tell you how to play the game, but you are behind. If you just hit one of them quickly, quicker than Josh, and it is right, high risk, high return. Okay? You got nothing to lose. Last question. Who wasn't a member of the Legion of Doom besides Hawk and Animal? Was it Jake Roberts, the Spoiler, Paul Ellering, or Matt Bourne from the Bourne Identity?
Jesus Christ.
Wait, who wasn't a member?
Who wasn't a member of the Legion of Doom besides Hawk and Animal?
I don't even... Sure.
Ooh, it was Matt Bourne. One of you picked it. Who picked it?
That was me.
Oh, here we go.
Paul Ellering was the manager of the Legion of Doom when they were the Road Warriors in the NWA territory. The Spoiler, I'm not too sure about. Jake Roberts was a member of their Survivor Series team in Survivor Series 1989 or 1990. Matt Bourne played Doink, so he was the odd one out.
The original Doink.
Let's see if you were quick enough, Psychonaut, to bring you up. Oh! Josh took it out. 5,270 versus Psychonauts, 4,661.
Yeah! The champ is here!
deserved though, Josh. I mean, like, I have no shame in losing that to you. Some of those questions were very territorial based, and I'm familiar with some of the territories, but you have to get into Jim Cornette kind of levels of wrestling history. I think Jim Cornette did that quiz. I'm sure of that.
I would be willing to bet that he had something to do with it just based on the spelling errors and the level of knowledge that some of these required.
And just, you know, doing it, I just felt a level of contempt levied towards me while I was doing that quiz as well, so...
How dare you not know about Mr. Wrestling 2's wife? She made everything for everybody back in the territories.
Let me tell you something about Wahoo McDaniel that people of these days don't quite understand. Give me some fucking Dairy Queen.
That brings us to the end of Forcible Entry. I am so incredibly late for work, but it's been so much fun. Before we go, Josh, quickly plug your shit. You're in so many bands, often playing the same bill.
Yeah, so I play drums and do vocals in Circle Breaker, which is on Instagram. If you search Circle Breaker, I do vocals and guitar in Hellion Child, which is Hellion Child Official on Instagram, and our album Infernal Ascension is on Spotify. I play in an AC/DC cover band. I play acoustic tunes for children and hospitals. I do all kinds of things with people and places. I do a lot.
That was very, very Sean Evans of you, Riggs. I was waiting for... Right, Josh, this camera. Tell the people what you've got going on.
All right, here we are. We ran the gauntlet. So look down this camera. I love Hot Ones, but I hate that little bit where they've got before the credits where they're like, they pretend that they're like, you know, and they're like fanning their face or they're like dabbing their eyes or whatever. Because I want to believe that like maybe they didn't make it. And by putting that at the start, that shows me, oh, they did it, they survived, and they're able to joke about it. But I want to know, like, Eddie Huang's is the best, where he's like, I'm going the hottest one first, and then just like shits his pants basically. I highly recommend that one, but... You guys make me later for work. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week where I promise I will try and do some scratching. It can't be that hard. It surely can't be that hard.
I think you got it. I believe in you.